There's now becoming a greater push for, okay, how do we prevent the next pandemic? Arguably, Lexington technology is the best technology out there, I believe, to prevent the next pandemic. And we hope to convince the Army of that as well. Also, there's an interest in multiplexing. You know, we're entering the cold and flu season. So now you have not just coronavirus, you have flu A, flu B, RSV, adenovirus, et cetera. So a lot of these technologies that they funded that only do coronavirus aren't going to be of any use as we move forward living with this new virus amongst all the other viruses. And so I do think there's going to be more of an appetite to support multiplex technologies like Lexigen. And so certainly we're going to do the best we can to get some non-dilutive funding in.
Hello, everyone. This is Guy, and welcome to the FinTwit podcast. Today, I spoke with Dr. Jack Regan, CEO of Lexigen and the inventor of the MyQ Lab. So Jack was generous enough to spend well over an hour with me. We talked about his hobbies. We talked about his passion for preventing the next pandemic. He explained the process from an idea with a small team to eventually going public. We even talked about what is happening with the Army, with Ethos, future enhancements in the MyQ Lab, disappointments around missed timelines, new ways for vet clinics to start using the MyQ Lab without having to pay for it up front, and although he is a Patriots fan, we kept it pretty light and ended up having what I believe was an enjoyable and productive discussion. I want to remind everyone, nothing on this podcast is financial advice or recommendations to buy, sell, or hold the company discussed. Here is my conversation with Dr. Jack Regan. Hey, Jack. Welcome to the podcast. I really appreciate you taking some time from your schedule to be here tonight.
My pleasure, Guy. Thanks for having me.
First off, I've been a shareholder since August 2020. And quite vocal about it on Twitter. So I want to make sure everyone is aware of that. I believe most of the listeners would agree that this podcast is still in, let me call it experiment mode, but I'm having a lot of fun doing it. And it has already given me opportunities like tonight, which is even more than I could have asked for when I first started this. So Jack, so you know, many of the listeners of the podcast are investors and some are definitely familiar with Lexigen. However, there could be some that are just beginning their due diligence or learning as much as they can about you and the company. So I'm wondering if you can provide them with a brief summary of what Lexigen does. I think it would be nice to touch on what is exciting about Lexigen, but also what is exciting about genomics. So the genomic space in general.
Yeah, certainly. So Lexigen is really in the business of making PCR, which is an extremely powerful chemistry, so easy to use that it can effectively be done anywhere. And so we've developed a system called the MyQ Lab. It allows for effectively a non-trained person to run a sample through our system. And our system purifies the genetic material and then performs a highly multiplex PCR reaction looking for targets of interest. And the reason I say targets of interest is often Lexigen spends a lot of time talking about pathogens. The reality is our system doesn't care if it looks for a pathogen or any other type of genetic sequence. There's a lot of things out there that don't cause disease that do cause problems. For instance, in the pharmaceutical manufacturing space, there are certainly different types of bugs out there that don't cause human disease, but can wreak havoc for a biopharmaceutical manufacturer. And for that matter, looking at even cancer, you know, cancer is often caused by genetic abnormalities, and anything with a genetic sequence to it, our platform can theoretically detect. Now, we happen to spend 98% of our time talking about pathogens because most often pathogens are causing illness, and it's very important to diagnose an illness appropriately, very quickly, so you can act accordingly with the right therapeutics. And so time matters most in illness. And so this is why Lexigene and most of its marketing material focuses on pathogens.
Thank you for the nice summary. We will definitely dig a little deeper into the technology later on. If you don't mind me taking a few steps back, if we go back, let's say 25 years ago, what did 10-year-old Jack Regan want to be when he grew up?
So 25 years ago, I was older than 10. This year, I'm about to turn 50, so I guess I'd be about 24 at the time. So anyway, I sort of view what I'm doing now as my second career. My first career, if you will, or my first pursuit was marine science. And so I went through undergrad, sort of determined to be the next Jacques Cousteau. And I loved, you know, being in and around the ocean and doing research focused on, you know, marine organisms. However, after college, I felt that I was unfulfilled and I needed some different challenges. And I also didn't want to spend, like, say, 6 months on a NOAA vessel doing research. So then I decided to go more towards biomedical sciences. And so I did have a really pretty significant shift, if you will, in my career where, you know, all during undergrad, I focused on marine sciences. And then only after college did I realize, okay, you know what? For me, marine sciences was more of a hobby. And, you know, what am I now going to do for a profession? And so then I decided to go on to graduate school and I started down my path of getting into effectively molecular biology and ultimately molecular diagnostics.
I actually did take a few marine biology courses at Dalhousie University, but I quickly realized that that wasn't going to be for me. So yeah, I didn't go in that direction. I do have a selfish question that I want to ask and might as well ask it now. Most of my friends would consider me a sports fan, and being you are from Beverly, so close to many big professional sports teams, I was wondering if you follow the Patriots, the Bruins, or the Red Sox.
I do. Interestingly, you left out Celtics from there, but nonetheless,
yeah.
You know, I certainly do. I would say I didn't grow up playing football. I grew up, you know, playing soccer, running track, and ultimately did some rugby in college. But that said, as far as a fan and what I enjoy watching the most, I would argue I watch the Patriots the most. Next, I really enjoy hockey. I've certainly spent some time playing beer league hockey, so I like to play hockey myself. And so I like those two sports the most right now for me. Although I, in the past, have enjoyed baseball, I feel like the sport's a little bit too slow for me now, so I tend to watch a little bit less.
Nice. I actually played hockey my whole life and last year decided to retire from beer league as well. So I'm also a Habs, Jays, and Saints fan, so I'll just keep going before you have too much time to think about that. So Jack, having seen you in several interviews, some of them were on YouTube, others were on your website, it's quite obvious you have a passion for pathogen detection and the MyQ lab, which you invented. But since we're on the topic of sports and hobbies, I think listeners might be interested in knowing what you do for fun outside of the company.
That's a good question. So as I've gotten older, the things I do for fun have changed, as you might imagine. So, you know, back during, I would say this, and we'll go back, I guess, to 20 odd years. And so when I was back living in the Bay Area, I really wanted to learn how to windsurf. And so I ended up learning how to windsurf out in the Bay. And it's just a phenomenal sport. Great out there. And I wanted to try to do it a little bit out here as well. So once I moved from California to the Boston area, I did bring some of my gear. And really the best wind out here is effectively starting in November and often in the winter. And, you know, to sail in those conditions in New England are pretty darn rough. And so, unfortunately, my windsurfing gear has largely stayed in the garage. So what I do now, again, as I'm older, as I'm approaching 50, my body doesn't quite do the things as well or as much as I like to do. And so I have to moderate my activities. And so right now, mostly it's me trying to keep up with my son. I have a 12-year-old son. And so occasionally, you know, we'll go out and, you know, play some disc golf, or, you know, I often just, of course, watch him play the sports. But my ability to compete athletically with him is not quite what it used to be 10 years ago. So,
Jack, I just turned 39 and I already feel that way. So I can definitely relate. I think I would have a hard time keeping up in a sprint with my 7-year-old. So, yeah. But if you don't mind now, I was thinking we could dive into some questions that some of our listeners potentially have been curious about. Clearly, when you start a company, it doesn't happen overnight. To give you some background, though, of where this question is coming from, I would consider myself a podcast addict. I listen to them pretty much every day and sometimes for hours. And I have listened to a lot of different CEOs from smaller public companies. And often they tell their detailed stories. So I figured I would give you the opportunity to tell yours. Feel free to go as detailed or as brief as you would like. But what I'm mainly interested in is knowing what was your thought process when you first started this company, and wondering if you're able to walk us through the process of going from a lab of maybe a handful of teammates to deciding on a specific device, and then later on deciding to go public and finding people that were willing to take a chance and invest in your vision.
Well, the answer to this is quite a long answer, and so I will try to breeze through the answer as quickly as I can. You can ask for more detail if you like.
Yeah.
And so quickly in graduate school, I studied the flu virus, and I became passionate about, you know, pathogens that could cause a pandemic. And so this is going back to, I finished grad school in 2006. And after grad school, I went to go work for Lawrence Livermore National Labs, where I got involved with a team of scientists and engineers developing instrumentation to do automated pathogen detection, both for respiratory pathogens as well as for biothreat agents like smallpox and plague and things of that nature. And so through my experience at the National Lab, I sort of, if you will, got indoctrinated into automation and how automation can take a very complex chemistry and take it out of the hands of a technician, if you will, or a molecular biologist, and put it into something where a layperson can run a very complex chemistry and get a high quality answer relatively quickly. And so the instruments I was involved in helping develop at the National Lab, you know, arguably were very successful. The one for biothreat got adopted by the Department of Homeland Security and became part of their BioWatch program. So that said, you know, when I was doing the clinical work for respiratory pathogen detection, the docs wanted me to commercialize that product and make it through the FDA. And I told them, hey, listen, you know, I think this product can be a lot better. And so I set out to design a better system. And so that sort of took me down the path of effectively starting the company. So this was, mind you, now 2007-8 era. And so filed for patent protection of a new idea to the National Lab, started looking for angel and venture capital funding. Very long story short, between 2008 and 2010 was the Great Recession and money dried up. And so my first attempt to start Lexigene failed. And only when market conditions improved, the patents had been issued and were now defensible, did I then meet some people who felt they could help me start the company. And you never start a company, or you rarely start a company all by yourself. There's always others often involved. And so it's these others who introduced the idea of bringing the company public immediately. And it was never something that entered my mind. I thought it was crazy and extremely high risk. That said, I felt deep in my heart that this technology should be developed and should be commercialized, and that if I wasn't the person to do it, it wouldn't get developed. And so I took a massive risk and left a good paying job to the chagrin of my wife, who was furious, and, you know, took a massive leap trying to start a company. And so this second time around to starting the company happened really starting in 2015. So between 2015 and 2016, basically ended up consulting on starting the private company and then working on the reverse takeover to make that happen and bringing in seed capital to start real company and real product development. And so that happened in fall of 2016. And it is a massive risk that I took because, you know, starting a company, in my view, it's a binary event. You either succeed or you fail. And in my mind, you know, we still have a long way to go until we achieve success, in my opinion. I mean, I want to have a cash flow positive company, you know, that does a lot of good in the world. And so we're not there yet, but I think we're making good progress. And so I tried to sum it up relatively quickly. And so anything you want to ask deeper than that, go ahead.
No, Jack, I think that was great. And you brought up something that really, I think, will answer a question that, so I've had a few questions from some investors that were aware that I was quite passionate about Lexigene. And one of the questions that came up that I was never able to answer was, you know, they look at your technology and they see the promise, they see the difference that it can make. And their first question is, why did he go public? How could he not get funding for this? And so I think your story really answers that. So yeah, thank you. So Jack, we all know your team has made a marketing push in the vet space. And you had a great update yesterday with lots of information on the vet space and some scientific information, which I was interested in. But I'm wondering if you could tell us more about open access and where you personally see the greatest opportunities in the space long term.
Yeah, sure. So open access is arguably the feature that is most unique in our system, and certainly I think the most underappreciated. And so what open access means is that we give the end user the capability to create a fully custom multiplex PCR test that our system automates. Fundamentally, our system is a microfluidic system that draws, you know, PCR chemistry into the system to perform a test. Because the PCR chemistry is kept separate from the single-use disposable, it allows for an end user to effectively provide their own test chemistry into the system to meet their testing needs. And so this feature allows for current individuals who do PCR and do it manually by hiring staff to go ahead and extract the genetic material, assemble, you know, the PCR chemistry and do the PCR test, analyze the data, to buy a single system, very small footprint, very affordable, and load the chemistry into this and create a fully customized test. And effectively what we've done is we've removed the requirement to effectively employ a high skilled person and have lab space with refrigerators, freezers, you know, PCR machines, and the person actually analyzing the data, and substitute that with a small instrument that goes on your desktop that a layperson can operate. And so we feel that in time, what will end up happening is we'll get a lot of customers who have unique testing needs. They need to test for something that, you know, is important to them. No other big manufacturer provides them an automated solution, but they can use our platform to run their own PCR chemistry to give them the answers they're most interested in. And so we do think in time this will really catch fire. That said, currently right now, the company is focusing on, I would say, marketing towards the more tangible markets that people know and understand, because we need to attract investors who understand what the value prop of Lexigene. If we start talking too much about open access, they just don't get it. And they don't understand that the massive, I would say, market opportunity there is in open access, because nobody else is doing this. I mean, we are the only company doing this. When you're the only company, you have to spend an awful lot of time and effort developing the education and the marketing to start gaining traction. So as such, we focus on the tangible markets like vet diagnostics, food safety, ultimately human clinical, that everybody, all investors can at least appreciate, because something comes to mind when they hear those phrases. But when you mention open access, people's eyes gloss over and they really don't know what you're talking about. That's often because these individuals, you know, don't have a background in molecular biology. They've never been to graduate school. They don't understand all the different types of science that happens out there that relies on genetic amplification. And for those who do, I think they can certainly appreciate a need for a easy to use automated PCR instrument that can be customized for the end user. And that's exactly what we're doing. I think in time it will be appreciated, but it will take some time to get there.
Yeah, that sounds really exciting and is one of the things that really got me interested in Lexigene in the first place. So if I can try to summarize that really quickly, basically, let's say we have a GI doctor who sees patients that have very specific symptoms or have specific bugs that we would want to test for. They get a panel, they choose the 27 targets that they want to look at. And because of this, when they run the MyQ lab, they are going to be much more confident at the end of the test that they will find whatever target is causing the symptoms in that patient. Does that sound about right?
It does. Let me sort of expand upon that a little bit. And so we at Lexigene create validated tests, right? And we assemble those tests into a panel. And so the best way to think of it, if you've looked at any of our marketing material, we have an assay panel right now that holds 9 vials, okay? Each one of those vials can screen for up to 4 different targets at once. One of them is often reserved for a control. And so we really view it as only 3 targets per vial. And so a customer, say looking at a GI customer, could say, listen, you know, I want to screen for, you know, E. coli, Staphylococcus, and Enterococcus. It appears Lexigene has a triplex for that. Let me buy that triplex. But you know what? I'm also studying the entire microbiome, and there's a whole bunch of other bacteria in the gut that I'm interested in not only identifying, but quantifying. And you know what? I'm going to go buy a test for rotavirus, right? And obviously it's a virus, not necessarily a bacterium, but, and I'm going to put this rotavirus test on the MyQ lab. And you know what? I'm not going to go through Lexigene to buy that rotavirus test. I'm going to go to Thermo Fisher. They have a rotavirus test that I trust, and I'm going to load that on to the Lexigene MyQ lab, and we will enable that. And so if you extend that out, they can, you know, effectively put any test that they want on our system. Now, mind you, we still monetize the test because every single time you have to run the instrument, what we do require is, one, they have to use our single-use disposable, which is for extracting and purifying the genetic material. And two, when they do open access custom PCR development, they're still required to use our master mix and our internal controls. And so we have controls in the system that give us confidence the system did its job, because we don't want a customer coming back to us saying, hey, listen, it didn't work. Because more often than not, you know, people will put an assay on the system that's just not a good assay, and it's not the system's fault. It's the PCR test was a bad test. And this is why Lexigene spends so much time, money, and effort to fully validate a high quality test, because there's value in that. So,
okay. That makes sense. Yeah, makes a lot of sense. And I find that so interesting. And I'm wondering, maybe I can even expand or ask you something that is sort of similar or about open access. Let's say we have a clinic. Let's talk about vet, because that's what you guys are really pushing for right now. Let's say there's a clinic that sees a wide variety of pets, and they know ahead of time that they could benefit from, like, they know all the panels that you're selling, and they know that they could benefit from at least 2 different panels. So in a case like this, what's going to be your recommendation to them? Are they going to be swapping using only one machine with 2 panels, or buying 2 machines and each with their unique panel?
Yeah, no, good question. And so a lot depends on the size of the practice. There are hospitals out there where they'll have one system configured for our bacterial AMR version 2 panel, another system configured to run, say, a pneumonia panel or eventually the GI panel, right? And so that's good for the bigger hospitals. For the smaller hospitals, where they're not going to have as many patients, now the question is how do they handle that? And so a couple things. You know, one, we internally have tested, you know, protocols for swapping, taking the panel out, putting in the fridge, putting a new panel in, right? We haven't yet enabled that for the customer yet. In time, we will enable that. We believe we're going to enable that for the customer. But it's not like you could do that, you know, five times. I mean, the system is designed to have a panel in there, run that panel until it's exhausted. We certainly could swap it out once, but if you end up swapping it more than that, the system needs to prime and you'd run out of test material, right? And so we'd have to put some limitations on it.
Okay.
That said, this is our first commercial product. We don't expect it to be our last commercial product. We expect to make revisions to the technology, new features, et cetera. And so we do at least envision where you have a system where you can put two panels in one system and have the system draw from either panel. And so that's certainly a future product, may even just be an upgrade, right? That allows for that, where we're like, listen, Lexi's now marketing three different panels. You know, we recognize there's a need to have more than one. We're going to come and upgrade your system so you can get more functionality out of the system. And so still a product that's right now just in concept form, but you know, at some point we expect to get there.
Thanks for those details. I was wondering if we could double click on that notion that we will see future versions of the MyQLab. And what I wanted to know is, how did you come up with the number 27? To me, it seems like an odd number, and I guess it's odd in two different ways. But is there also appetite to expand the amount of targets?
Yeah, so again, the answer could be quite long. I'll try to summarize it pretty quickly here. And so in regards to increasing the plex, it's really quite easily done. Right now we have what's called a four-color reader, which means that for every single reaction, we can have up to four tests per reaction. And we have 9 different tests, if you will, in the system. So 4 times 9 is 36. You subtract out the controls, you're left with 27. Okay. And so that's where we get the 27. In real-time PCR, it's very easy to go from 4-channel detection to 5-channel detection. All we need to do is add another filter to the system. Extremely easy to do. But that now means that if you want to go from a 4 test per reaction to a 5 test per reaction, you now have to validate a 5-plex rather than a 4-plex. Anytime you add an additional PCR test to the mix, it becomes a little bit more complicated. There's more likelihood of the assays or the tests interfering with one another. And so right now we've kept it at 27. We feel like there is diminishing return for going higher. We absolutely can go higher. But at some point, you start going up to, like I say, a 35-plex or a 50-plex or whatever. You start investing a lot of money in the cost of the tests when you're really targeting things that are so rare that arguably you shouldn't be testing for it because it's going to only happen less than 1% of the time, right, of all the positive samples out there. And so for that reason, 27 is a good, healthy number. That said, currently, in our current bacterial AMR version 2 panel, if you count up how many different sort of PCR tests are in there, there's actually 43. And so this is, again, it's going to get technical here. We can combine multiple PCR tests into a single fluorescent channel. And so, for example, say you're looking for a resistance gene to tetracycline. There are a lot of these different variants of tetracycline resistance genes. And we might take two of the variants, say the A and the B, put them both into the same fluorescent channel. If a signal comes up, we know either tetracycline A or B resistance is there, but we don't know which one it is. But we also don't really care either because the pathogen is resistant to tetracycline, right? And so effectively, we can achieve a higher plex just by doing sort of a nifty trick on the molecular biology side of developing the assays.
Okay, now the amount of targets makes a little bit more sense to me. This next question, I was going to ask it to you later, but we might as well stay on the topic of enhancements. I want to allow you to bring your inner Elon Musk and picture where you see this technology in 10 or even 20 years from now. Now, do you see a complete switch from the lab to the point of care, for example, or is it even bigger than that in your mind?
Well, I think fundamentally across the entire industry, you're going to see PCR becoming much more commonplace. I certainly see, every CVS, Walgreens, et cetera, having PCR capability, right? And so for us in our company, we certainly want to be part of that equation. We want to be able to provide our tests wherever it's needed. We know we're going to have to end up developing a higher throughput system. It's one of those things where, the reason we focused on the vet industry is because, one, we need to get a product to market quickly, generate some revenue, et cetera. But also, it's an industry that they're generally not running 100 samples per day, right? And so we didn't
Right.
need a high throughput system. So the future of Lexigene, of course, smaller, faster, cheaper, but also higher throughput. We recognize that there are industries out there, like the biopharma industry, that want to do higher volume tests. And likewise, you talk about, okay, are we going to sort of lose the reference lab? We'll never lose the reference lab. The reference lab is always going to be there. There's always going to be a need for it. I just think that more and more testing will become decentralized outside the reference lab because people are demanding faster results. We're in an era today where we're used to email. In the old days, you'd send a letter, right? Or send a text message nowadays, and you're expected to respond instantly, and you're expected to be working 24/7. And so we are starting to see that in of course, molecular diagnostics for both human and veterinary medicine. And I think it's going to become commonplace where you're going to start going to your doctor's office, where right now the chances of you going to a doctor's office and getting access to multiplex PCR in the clinic is really, really small. It's not anywhere close to being penetrated in regards to the companies out there servicing the sector. And so, of course, COVID has been a big push for these smaller instruments that just do COVID only. But the reality is that infectious disease as a general whole, there are so many different pathogens and molecular markers that are important where these COVID-only tests won't be able to do, right? And so our technology is really designed to be a workhorse where we can do a lot, but as a result, it's a little bit bigger and a little bit more expensive and a little bit slower. But it's a powerful instrument. And so anyway, as technology advances, things are going to become smaller, cheaper, faster, et cetera. And so it's going to be an exciting time in the coming years because we're going to benefit from this. But truthfully, we need these advancements because, again, if you followed my webinar yesterday, right now I am unfortunately a little depressed about, what's happening with global warming and what's happening with governments and their lack of regulation of prescribing drugs and how this is going to influence the advancement of antimicrobial superbugs that are out there resistant to almost everything. And as a result, we're going to have illnesses which are very, very difficult to treat. And so I do think that we need these faster PCR-based detection systems out there in the field being used so that we can arguably help maintain the good health of humankind and for that matter, animal kind.
Awesome. Good answer. And I don't want to drag this too much longer, but I did have one more question about that that I'm interested in. And this is probably looking really far in the future, but I have a $10,000 generator at my house and I use it maybe two, three times a year. And nobody really questions why I bought it or whatnot. I happen to need it every now and then in the winter. It can be handy for 2 or 3 days if we happen to have a power outage. But what I'm interested in knowing is, will we see some, well, like one day, will we be able to purchase something like a MyQ Lab, let's say a version 7.0, and be able to use it from the comfort of our home? So you wake up one day, you're getting ready for work, you realize that you're not feeling well. You do a test and you're able to sort of make a decision on, do I stay home today or is it safe for me to go to work? This is just a mild cold. I can wear a mask and off I go.
That's a good question. Different technologies are suited for different applications. The at-home market is not a market that Lexgene currently is looking at, because our technology is designed to be placed where there's going to be sort of a regular flow of samples. For the individual home, now, Grant, you just mentioned the $10,000 generator, right? We certainly expect our technology to be that affordable in the future. But that said, is that a market we want to go after? Are we best suited for that as of today? Right now, we are not. You've heard a lot about these antigen tests. Antigen tests, if you're symptomatic, you have basically a 7 in 10 chance or so, if you're lucky, of detecting whether or not you're sick with that one particular pathogen. So they're very, very limited in their utility. They don't
Exactly.
look at, antibiotic resistance, things of that nature. And so they really have no purpose there. So could Lexigene invest in a future product in one which is designed for the home? Absolutely. Right now, for us, given the fact we're so myopically focused on building our current product in the maybe generation 2 and 3, rather than generation 4 and 5, it's hard for me to envision. But certainly, as the company grows, it's on the table, and it's a great market to go after, and eventually we may very well do that.
Okay, good answer. I have a question. Throughout the last few months, I've been sort of wondering. I know Ethos has a MyQLab, and I know that they are going to be doing some testing on the panels. I've sort of wondered, and you may not have this answer at all, and that's okay if you don't. But I was wondering if they're excited about the MyQLab. Like if I was them, I think I'd want to purchase more. And the reason I would do that is, again, I'm not a vet, so I clearly probably don't understand the business enough to even have an opinion on this. But I was wondering, wouldn't they want to purchase more units, slowly get their staff used to the new workflow, knowing that additional panels are coming fairly soon? And also, I was thinking too, this would probably help with the workflow and staffing changes that might be coming. Like, I know from my experience in business, if there's a change at one clinic, unless all your clinics are exactly the same, you might not be able to predict the effect that it's going to have in another clinic. So I was just thinking if they did that, it might better prepare them for the change down the road. Did you have an opinion on that?
Well, this is what I can tell you. I can tell you we're certainly talking to Ethos. Ethos recently was acquired by NVA. I'm not sure if you know that. And so NVA, I think it stands for National Veterinary Associations. It's a massive
Okay.
company. And so that purchase certainly complicated some things with our negotiations with Ethos for certain,
Yeah.
because right now, in the veterinary space, there's a massive amount of consolidation happening, and as you just said, that they need to sort of roll things out throughout the practice. Different organizations deal with it differently. Some will do sort of pilot programs, others will do a more broad adoption. We're still in the early phase. Ethos themselves are very interested in seeing these more panels developed. That's why we're working with them on the pneumonia and the diarrhea panels. And so we certainly do expect Ethos to be buying more systems. The timeline is still to be determined, not public yet, but we're certainly in conversations with them regarding that.
Okay, thanks. And one thing, and this is not specific to Ethos, you just said something that sort of triggered me to ask another question. I'm just wondering for vet clinics in general, what's the major workflow or staffing change that will happen when a veterinary customer purchases a MyQLab?
It's a good question. So we're really proposing a change in business model.
Yeah.
They are used to just collecting the sample, putting it into a courier bag, and sending it out. arguably, they're not doing close to as much testing as they should because the turnaround time from the reference lab is so poor. And so, to practice high quality medicine, they should be testing more so they avoid having these return pets with unresolved infections. And so, in regards to what has to change on their end, really, they're still going to be collecting the sample, but now rather than putting it into a courier envelope, they're going to be right in the MyQ lab and now get an actionable result. And so, what they're currently doing is they see the animal, they prescribe a drug, put it into the courier bag. 5 or 6 days later, they then have to call up the pet owner and say, listen, okay, we made a mistake. Go back to your pharmacy, pick up a new drug because it's resistant to the drug we prescribed. I'm sorry, your pet's in a worse off situation. Now the workflow is okay. We don't expect the pet owner to keep the dog at the hospital for 2 hours. That said, a lot of hospitals have, patients that are effectively admitted, so that's not the issue. But for this now, they have to say, okay, let's go back to the MyQ lab or to our desktop computer, check our email, figure out what the report said, and then we call in the prescription or call the pet owner saying, hey, listen, well, we've just identified what's causing the illness. We know exactly how best to treat it. Go get this. The pet's going to be better. Start feeling better within 24 hours to 48 hours. And so it does require the veterinarian to not wait days, but sort of go back and double check 2 hours later to say, listen, okay, this is what we've learned. And then deliver that information to the pet owner rather than guessing on what's going on and then having to call back apologizing, afterwards once they get the culture results back, which takes days.
Yeah. And this is not me making a judgment, but it sounds like they are often put in a situation where they're almost forced to take a guess.
They are. I mean, because
Yeah.
I know when I'm a little bit sick, I complain bitterly, and I want to go to the doctor and feel like I'm getting some relief, right? And so, the doctor, whether if you're talking human clinic or a pet with a veterinarian, that care provider does feel a certain amount of pressure to provide relief, and so there's absolutely a ton of pressure for veterinarians to prescribe something to give the pet owners value in their visit because they're going in, they're paying a couple hundred bucks for their visit and they're expecting something in return. And so now the value prop we provide them is, hey, listen, we're going to do genetic testing right now on your animal and we're going to tell you exactly what you need. And you know what? This is going to have a great chance of reducing your overall cost because many of these illnesses are misdiagnosed and you can spend days, if not weeks, trying to figure out what's going on with the animal. Often spending hundreds of dollars, if not thousands of dollars, just trying to do diagnostics. And so, ruling out certain things is very, very important. Say, for example, urinary tract infections. There are many reasons why a dog may either squeal in pain or have blood in their urine or just effectively be incontinent. And often the veterinarian is wrong and they've gone on to do other things and they haven't really determined the root cause of the illness. And so, by doing a rapid genetic test, you quickly rule in or rule out an infection. If they do not have an infection there, within 2 hours, you know that, and okay, we have to order some more imaging. They might have, a blockade that needs to be relieved. They might have bladder cancer. They may have Cushing's disease. There's a long list of things that can cause urinary symptoms that then the veterinarian can pursue very quickly rather than finding out effectively a week later. In which case, if it hasn't been successfully resolved, the patient may be in a lot worse condition.
That all makes sense to me. Jack, I want to pivot a little and talk about something that was mentioned in the update yesterday. You mentioned that MyQ Labs would be shipped to the Army in the coming week for the next step of the process. This is great news, and I know many of the listeners are excited that you have your foot in the door with the Army. But what really perked up my ears was when you mentioned the possibility of non-diluted funding from this if the MyQ lab ends up meeting their needs. That said, one question I have is, have you ever applied for government funding? And would this scenario be
like the scenario with the army be considered something similar?
So the government likes to fund technologies that are already sort of proven winners, if you will, right? Although the government will argue that they try to support startups, the reality is that they don't as much as they should. So if you look at where all of the BARDA money went to, it went to massive companies out there that are basically billion-dollar market cap companies, where the government likes to say, "Hey, listen, we're spending the taxpayer dollars supporting the pandemic efforts with these massive companies." And so, how that relates to Lexigene is the government likes to swoop in just as a company is starting to become successful, give them some money effectively, and claim all of the credit, right? And so Lexigene really has just started selling its technology. We're at the point right now where we feel comfortable getting in front of the Army, demonstrating our technology. And the hope is that they're going to recognize its value and certainly provide us either a contract or a grant to do additional product development. And
Okay.
so we're certainly looking into these things. The first step is generating data that is relevant to them. And so one of the things that's important for your listeners is, as hopefully, knock on wood, this pandemic is sort of tailing off, there's now becoming a greater push for, okay, how do we prevent the next pandemic? Arguably, Lexigene technology is the best technology out there, I believe, to prevent the next pandemic. And we hope to convince the Army of that as well. Also, there's an interest in multiplexing. We're entering the cold and flu season. So now you have not just coronavirus, you have flu A, flu B, RSV, adenovirus, et cetera. So a lot of these technologies that they funded that only do coronavirus aren't going to be of any use as we move forward living with this new virus amongst all the other viruses. And so I do think there's going to be more of an appetite to support multiplex technologies like Lexigene. And so certainly we're going to do the best we can to get some non-dilutive funding in.
Perfect. No, you're speaking my language. I think it's really important for us to be able to test for all those things when somebody has symptoms, and that's the beauty of the MyQ Lab in my mind. You also mentioned at the corporate update yesterday that one of the customers had asked to delay their MyQ Lab order due to the hurricane, I believe it was. I can't even imagine what they had to go through, but it sounds like now things are kind of settling down and maybe they're ready to take the next steps. I think one of the questions that was asked that you never had a chance to get to was how many units did they purchase?
They've purchased one. That organization is has multiple hospitals within their space. It's surprisingly enough, it is like a veterinary real estate company that basically leases space to veterinary hospitals, right?
Okay.
And I know it sounds bizarre. And so they are huge fans of this technology. They're getting their system. I think it's shipping on Monday. And so
Nice.
we do expect them to hopefully be buying more systems for their other clients. And so it's one of those things where this particular individual is a dog owner. He has gone through pain and suffering from poor diagnostics. And he's like, this is going to be a game changer for the industry. He's an investor in Lexigene and he's passionate about the technology. And so, this first installation, as you might imagine, a lot of these groups buy one system, they're going to test it for a couple of months, and then hopefully buy a bunch more. And so, I literally, today was emailing this individual and, we're going to talk on Tuesday. And so, this is how things start. They start slow and they build momentum. And so, we certainly view this particular group to be a group that's purchased one, but will purchase more in the future.
Okay. I think you've created a great segue for my next question. And so it's been stated that you need approximately 150 to 200 units to break even. And I realize this is an estimate given there's a lot of moving parts. However, I've received this question many times on Twitter and message board. I've seen it on message boards. And let me take a few steps back. For our listeners that are new to this, I don't think we've mentioned this in the show yet, but the MyQ lab costs about $25,000. So keeping that in mind, even with the cost of the MyQ lab being $25,000, why or have we considered to just maybe give 100 or 200 MyQ labs away to a list of strategically handpicked customers as part of a maybe like an early adopter plan? And the way that I see this is not only would it possibly gain lifelong customers, but it might give you a head start on learning from them and possibly making more critical tweaks before the masses sort of get interested in the MyQ lab.
No, good
Any thoughts on
question.
that?
Yeah. And so when we attended these conferences in September, we really sort of view September as the true launch of the technology because it was our first opportunity to get in front of veterinarians. And so when we entered these conferences, we entered in with really one way to purchase the technology, which was a direct purchase. Leaving this conference, we realized, hey, listen, veterinarians want different options for acquiring the technology. And so we've since provide them the option to lease the technology as well as the option to do what's called a reagent rental. A reagent rental is where basically they get the system for free, but they're tied into a contract where they have to buy a certain number of tests per month for a certain number of months or years in order to effectively pay off the system. And so it's a form that veterinarians are used to. If you
Okay.
look at arguably our two biggest competitors, that would be IDEXX and Antech Diagnostics, which is part of Mars. They offer these reagent rental agreements to their customers where they effectively lock them into pricing for sometimes 7 years. And it's called the golden handcuffs, right? And so great for the company offering it because they're sort of locked in for 7 years, but often the customers get frustrated by it. And so, long story short, we have since implemented a version of that where we're being much more flexible because it's important for us to feel like our customers aren't getting, pinned down into something, right? We want to have better customer service than that. But we do want to enable them to get the technology and basically get an ROI within a month, right? Because if you're not paying for the equipment, you're just effectively leasing it through a reagent rental agreement. Our models were saying that, hey, listen, you do this and you're basically getting an ROI, if you just run X number of samples, per day, per week. And for us, it's really about five samples per week that they have to run, and they're certainly making money for their practice and providing higher quality care. And that's without purchasing the system. So it's effectively what you've just said, just sort of placing the system there for free. That said, these conferences ended about, 5, 6 weeks ago. It's a massive change in their operations and how they do things. And so nonetheless, these conversations take a while. All the key decision makers need to get involved, and they have to make a decision as to when it's going to happen, who's going to be responsible for it, et cetera. And so it's much more complicated than just saying, oh, here it is, plop it there and start using it. A lot of education has to happen, everything else. And so this is exactly what's happening right now. Those conversations are being made, plans are being made. And we certainly believe that we're going to be placing more systems under the reagent rental agreements so that they can use it effectively risk-free. Because right now, our focus is on placements, not initially revenue. Our company is going to grow and succeed by getting a lot of customers out there, not really worrying so much about profit margins right now, but worrying about profit margins in a year and a half or 2 years, when all of a sudden we have that 250 or whatever customers, where all of a sudden we have enough mass that we can take advantage of volume manufacturing, and word of mouth starts spreading, and you now get into the early adopter phase where all of a sudden people are adopting it like crazy, and we're just trying to keep up with demand.
Very interesting. And I, looking from the outside, not, knowing all the ins and outs of vet medicine, I have a feeling that maybe a lot of customers will be wanting to go with maybe that new option that you guys are proposing. So that's definitely exciting. And one thing that you mentioned really struck me because I had a few investors asking me months ago, what's your main concern, or what are you considering a hurdle in this type of business? And for me, with my experience in pharmacy and having been involved in operations, the only word I could think of is workflow. And I know at the pharmacies, workflow, a small, a minute change in workflow is a massive change. And so I think this is going to be one of the hurdles. And you mentioned that in your answer that, we got to consider how that's going to affect our workflow, and it's all going to be good in the end. But to get there's a lot of decisions that need to be made, and people need to be trained, and people need to look at it positively. And so I think you made some really good points there. I want to dive into another possibly trickier question to answer. We have investors that have been following Lexogene for more than a year that are listening. We have some that have been following Lexogene for more than 4 years now. And in terms of it turns out that the FDA approval process is much more involved for the MyQ lab than we first had envisioned. So COVID hit, all these devices went through the process relatively quickly for some. And you have sort of, especially last year in March, there was this a lot of hype after the downturn. There was a lot of investors that kind of joined in, and there was a lot of hype around everything. And I think people saw these devices getting approved and envisioned Lexogene completing the process and having everything ready possibly by beginning of 2021. So now we fast forward to November 2021, and you now seem to have a very good understanding of what needs to happen, which is great. But I suspect that possibly the time since then has possibly left some scars and maybe some doubt in the minds of some. But personally, I've been involved in some software projects that I have been on the same end of very inaccurate estimates. And so I know the feeling. It's really hard. There's a lot of moving parts. And sometimes you provide an estimate and you feel like you're giving yourself more than enough time, and in the end, it just, one thing goes in a different direction and it affects everything. I'm just wondering, I guess I have to ask a question now, just rambling on. Would you consider your experience with the FDA process as an important lesson that Lexogene will be able to learn from going forward? And I find in your presentation yesterday, I thought that you guys did a really good job of setting expectations and explaining what you expect, and being maybe more careful with timelines and things like that. I'm just wondering what your thought process is there when it comes to that.
Yeah, so good question. And so let me address a couple of points. The technologies that got through the FDA were for the most part already 510K approved for other applications, right? And
Fair.
so all they had to do was apply a COVID test to their technology. They'd done all of the hard work before the pandemic, right?
Exactly.
And so it's very different when you're working to launch your very first product and get it onto the market, period, in a non-regulated market than actually going through the FDA. And certainly, I have some regrets on, the press release that went out. There was a tremendous amount of pressure to, quote, not miss the opportunity and to get some news out that would, get people excited. And I certainly have some regret over that because in my mind, I certainly understood the complexity, and developing a product like this is never as simple and as it seems. And so things take longer than you think. And it's just the reality of the business. It's not unique to Alexigene. It's all medical devices. Development takes time. It always takes time. And so certainly a lot of investors, felt very disappointed in the company, and I can appreciate that. It's something that I take very, very seriously. And but that said, at every single point where a press release went out, there was an honest effort to try to hit timelines and to do what we said we were going to do. In no way, form, or fashion did we ever put out something in which we didn't believe. And we were careful not to put in a press release any specific timeline because we knew it was going to be some challenges. And we certainly encountered some of those challenges. Things have taken longer than we hoped. And that's part of doing product development and part of trying to work your way through the FDA. So it has been a tough time because, I mean, again, going back, I developed this technology really to avert a pandemic. And I don't want to pull out the violin here, but it's very painful to me that this pandemic hit when it did, because you couldn't have thrown a more cruel fastball at me th than that. Because I'm like, well, how could you possibly do that to me, Mother Nature? Because, I spent my life trying to prevent the pandemic. And all of a sudden, the pandemic hits, and every single investor out there is like, you got to work on COVID. You got to work on COVID. Start getting press releases out on COVID. There is an enormous amount of pressure that the shareholders put on management of companies. And likewise, I put on our staff to meet timelines. And so in this particular case, I think what ended up happening is the COVID craze took hold of the stock. We didn't expect the stock to respond the way it did. We often put out releases that we think are going to be great releases that do absolutely nothing. And then we put out releases that we don't think are a big deal. And all of a sudden, the stock roars, right? And so it's not like we have a crystal ball in how the investor will react. That said, we are in the microcap space. We are still a growing early stage company. There's always risk involved. Investors, need to know that. And we do the best we can every single day to try to, put in honest day's work as hard as we can to hit milestones as quickly as we can. But not always do things happen as quickly as we'd like. And the good news is that we are making great progress. I think you probably caught the news release that we've completed the analytical phase of our FDA studies. That's arguably the hardest part. And so we have to, because that means that a ton of work has happened to get the company and the system ready for it. And it's, what people don't appreciate is software alone. The software development, the plan was an 11-month plan to get to the point where we've done through the development, the validation, the verification to make sure it would meet FDA requirements. 11 months, and we had to hire staff to help us get there, right? That's above and beyond what was needed for the veterinary space. So there's a tremendous amount of work that goes into making sure that when you're through the FDA, everything works as it should, and the customer has confidence. And to the person on the outside, it's very easy to get frustrated. I appreciate that. Just recognize that the folks on the inside here, we have a great staff busting their balls, pardon the terminology, to get the product available through the FDA as quick as we can. And we're working as hard as we can. We're making good progress, but we're not there yet. We have more work to do.
I really appreciate your honesty. I think an answer like that goes a long way. It shows that you're vulnerable, that you are human, and admitting to how you're feeling about certain things. I think the listeners will really appreciate that. Having said that, if you do get EUA approval, whenever that happens, does Lex would like are you planning on selling MyQLabs for COVID testing? And one thing that's been asked, one of my followers asked this, and I want to respect him and ask the question because he helps me a lot. So he was wondering, is it possible for the MyQLab to do pool testing? So like this is where you can maybe use it in schools or cruise ships. And I don't know a whole lot about pool testing or exactly how that works, but is that something that's possible?
Yes, it is. And so the FDA sets requirements for pool testing. The sensitivity of the technology is absolutely there. The size of the pool depends on the prevalence of infections, right? And so it requires you to monitor how many infections you're getting in the population, and your pool size adjusts according to the prevalence of infections. And so it's not like you just say, okay, we're going to pool 10 samples or 15 samples together. The FDA has a formula where you're adjusting that pool size based on the prevalence in the community. And so absolutely the technology is well suited to do that without a doubt. And to answer your question, will we sell into COVID? Once we're through the FDA, we'll absolutely have sales reps targeting human clinical diagnostics for COVID. That said, our value prop is pathogen-based, excuse me, panel-based detection, where we add flu A, flu B, RSV, adenovirus, strep, et cetera, to the panel. The FDA has provided guidance on how to do this under the EUA, which is faster than doing it under a 510K, which is great news for us.
Oh, great.
But it does mean that we have to do that work. It's not like you get through the FDA for COVID-19 testing, and all of a sudden I can throw on a flu A, flu B, and RSV test. I just can't do that. I have to go through the requirements, submit it to the FDA again. But having gone through the EUA for COVID-19, the process should be much, much, much faster to add these other pathogens than it would be going through for the first time.
Okay, that makes sense. And I mean, I when I look at your device, I see how it could be super valuable at when people have symptoms and not knowing what they have. I see it being valuable for COVID testing, but that's not where I see the big that's not where I see it making a massive difference. It's being able to test for all those viruses. One thing that we're sort of I've taken up a lot of your time here. I want to ask you one other question. I probably won't take that much of your time, hopefully. I know the focus is currently on the US market, and I'm wondering if there's any appetite or plans for Canada, Europe, Australia, Africa, or even Middle East. I would imagine they all have the need for something like this. And the reason what triggered me to ask this is I was listening to a podcast the other day, and I forget the name of the company, but they were starting in another country because the validation was not quite as strict, but it was strict enough that they didn't feel like they were, breaking any laws or that they were, taking any shortcuts. They just felt like they would be able to test out their technology a lot quicker there and then bring it over to the US. I'm wondering if you have any information on that.
Well, I mean, the reason why we've entered vet diagnostics and biopharma manufacturing is because these are, if you will, non-regulated markets that don't require FDA
Fair.
clearance, right? And so it allows us to sell, and this is why we're targeting this before, really before going to the FDA. In regards to foreign, like right now, our focus is the United States and Canada. We can sell into Canada as well. We don't have any sales reps specifically in Canada, but if we get word from, say, a veterinary group or contract drug manufacturer in Canada that wants our technology, we'll happily go up there, sell it, and support it. In regards to going to say, Europe, we need the CE mark, Africa, et cetera. I am contacted at least once a week, often multiple times a week, from distributors who want to distribute our products in Israel and Asia and wherever, right?
Exactly.
So it's important for us to grow the company in a responsible fashion. And right now, the time will come where that is going to make sense for the company. It's not today. I mean, we have so much work to do within North America to build the strength of the company to the point where we have the infrastructure to support international sales and service, et cetera. And so we're still a company of 45 employees. Our competitors out there, like say GenMark, for example, I'm not sure exactly how many people they have in their company, but they're probably like a 500 employee company, right? And
They
so
definitely
they
have
may
more.
have, yeah, I'm not, they may be 1,000, I'm not even sure what they are, but they certainly have the resources to support that. Right now, we're much too small. At some points, hopefully, of course, we're going to be successful in either one, we go international, we remain independent, or if we're building a great technology and a great company, we would also expect at some point an acquisition offers to come. All right. And so I have no idea. I don't want to pretend like that is what's coming. I just want to say that, as a company grows and becomes successful, whether we have the infrastructure to support international sales or whether it makes more sense for another company to take that over, is it to be determined.
No, that makes sense to me. Again, I appreciate your time. Let's switch gears before we wrap it up. And I just want to ask a fun question here, and you can answer, you can not answer if you don't have anything. But I'm wondering, being a CEO of a small public company, what is the strangest email you've ever received?
I have a folder on my computer of disgruntled shareholders. And so, as you might imagine, I get a lot of very, very colorful emails from people who are upset. Now, people who have invested money, they have an expectation they're going to earn money and make money on an investment, right? And I can certainly appreciate that. Nobody wants to lose money. Some investors, when they've lost money, they'll absolutely go on a tirade and just completely, rip me apart. And I have to bite my tongue. I really can't respond. And, often I try to call them, say, listen, just talk on the phone. And they often won't even take me up on the offer. And so it's certainly a little bit frustrating. Often I just have to ignore them. It's certainly a form of cyberbullying without a doubt. But on the flip side of the coin, they've invested in the company and the company has, not turned a profit for them. And so I can certainly understand why they're upset. And so I've received a lot of mad, I would say angry emails. That said, we are looking for investors that see the value of Lexgene's technology, recognize there's going to be ups and downs in a microcap company, and that you only lose money if you sell the stock, right? My goal is, hey, listen, build a successful company. The stock appreciation will come. For those who didn't have the patience to stick it out, I apologize. We didn't, meet their expectations. But, I certainly own, I have a tremendous amount of money invested in Lexigene. My family, my friends have a tremendous amount of money invested in Lexigene. And, we're in it for the long haul and for the success down the road. And not always is it going to be a straight line up. There's going to be ups and downs. But nonetheless, we're in it for the long haul. And so, strange emails, certainly I've gotten a lot of colorful ones. And, I hate to get them because often they're on the angry side, but it's part of the job. And I just have to deal with them as best I can.
Fair enough. Thanks for that.
Yeah,
I
I'm not
always
sure if
find it interesting.
that means sad or whatever, but yeah, hey, it's a reality, right? And so,
Yeah, I wasn't expecting a very specific one because you might be singling out somebody, so I'm not sure that would be appropriate, but good
and I
answer.
couldn't actually read them because I'm sure there'd be some expletives and inappropriate language, which would not be appropriate for your podcast.
Yeah, I try to keep it pretty light.
Yeah, understood.
So I have one last question, Jack. And I want you to forget about diagnostics, forget about Lexigene for a minute. And I want to ask you, what is a technology or a change that you see coming in 10 years that most people might not realize is going to have a significant impact on society?
Well, I certainly would have to, favor autonomous driving and even, quadcopter transportation. I do think we're going to be coming into an era where cars won't have steering wheels and you're going to hop in the back and, voice instructions and where to go. And next thing you know, you're there and you're not actually driving. And so, and for that matter, I even saw this advertisement the other day about effectively, a quadcopter for a person that they just sort of hop in it and fly somewhere and you're not actually abiding by the roads. And so it's very odd to think about this, but certainly I think it's going to happen. It's going to happen sooner than we think. Now, granted, there's going to certainly be regulations where it can only be done in certain areas. But nonetheless, we see it already today where the Tesla vehicles, et cetera, are, you know, have the autopilot mode, and that's happening. And there will be people who are resistant and don't want that change. But you look at some of these younger folks, they don't want to get a driver's license, and they're happy to hop into a vehicle and they can be on their mobile phone at all times of the day and not worry about having their hands at 10 o'clock, 2 o'clock driving and the stress of that. And so it's going to be a very different world as we go through this technology revolution, certainly. And we'll see what happens in the future.
Absolutely love that answer. And I agree 100%.
Yeah.
I just want to give you the opportunity to add anything if you were maybe hoping to cover anything else that we didn't cover tonight, and if there's any resources that you would recommend to our listeners.
I don't think so. I think I just want to close. And again, Guy, thanking you for your support of Lexigene. You know, it's people like you who, you know, do bring a smile to my face. And when I get those angry shareholders, you know, people like you help balance it out. And occasionally I get these nice emails, and I can tell you they're very much appreciated, because myself and my team, we work as hard as we can to do the best for the company that we possibly can. And because we all believe in what we're doing and believe that, you know, we're building a great company, great technology, and it's going to impact different markets in a very positive way. And we feel good about that. And so the people like yourself who advocate for the technology and the company and come to our defense when you have the haters out there throwing spitballs, it does mean a lot to us and to me personally. And so I want to, you know, thank you for that and your support and your trust. And it's not something I take lightly. And, yeah. And so if your listeners want to find out more information, certainly go to our webpage. We're constantly trying to improve the webpage, provide more information, and, you know, look forward to having them watch the company as it grows and certainly be hopefully become successful.
Well, thanks for taking the time to have this conversation with me, and best of luck to you and the team. I'm certainly excited about the future. I'm excited about this technology. And I don't know, maybe we can do this again sometime.
Hey, my pleasure, Guy, and thanks a lot for the opportunity, and best to you, and we'll stay in touch.
Take care.
Okay, take care, everyone.
I really hope you all enjoy the conversation as much as I did. Jack even spent an extra 15 minutes with me while I tried to figure out some issues I was having with my mic at the very start. He's a class act, and I look forward to watching his company and his career grow. If you have any questions or want to provide me with some feedback, please reach out to me at Guy_LeBlanc, GUY_LEBLANC on Twitter. And if you stuck around this long, it would be amazing if you could go to iTunes, leave me a rating and feedback so that I can take that and find a way to make this better for you and everyone else. Thanks for listening, and take care.